You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everyone. How are all my luminaries, my looms out there with your bright, beautiful spirits? Welcome back to The Osiris Munir Show. I am Osiris Munir, your host. Shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist. Oh my gosh, 818-571-1508. He is a dear heart, very willing to work with you almost on anything you have to do with moving, relocating, or whatever. That's your guy, 818-571-1508. That's Kevin. So today we're going to have a very special guest in celebration of Black History Month. We have a guest that is an award-winning travel television show host, executive producer, cultural influencer, and Telly Award winner. He's going to dispel any myths that have to do with Black folks can't swim, we don't want to swim, we don't know how to swim, we're afraid of water. He is going to talk about all of that and more, and why he started Kavada Swimwear. I hope I'm saying that right, and we'll talk to him in a minute. And a great day in the Stoke, which is the largest historical gathering of Black surfers in history. Come on. Come on now. He gets a big round of applause. Welcome our guest, Nathan Fluellen.
Hello. Hello. Nathan. Hey. How you doing?
I'm fine. Listen, is your last name pronounced Fluellen?
Yes. It the is. You got it right.
The principal of my elementary school was named Fluellen. Mr. Fluellen, and they named the street J.J. Fluellen in Waco, Texas, I swear. I swear. And I was
wow.
Like, I wonder, is it pronounced the same way as J.J. Fluellen? It's a street called J.J. Fluellen. It's spelled the same way your Fluellen is.
I'm going to have to go check it out. I was in Waco last summer. I went down there. They have a wave park in Waco.
And so, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's called Waco Surf. Yeah, so I went down surfing in Waco, Texas last summer in July.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you have to look up the street. It's called J.J. Fluellen.
Yeah,
and it's named after the G.W. Carver High School, which is an all-Black high school. That's why I graduated. So let's get into why you're here and why we want to talk to you. I found out, I believe, that you're a graduate of Tennessee State University.
Yes.
And in being a graduate of TSU, how have you been able to demystify Africa and the element of water for Americans?
Well, TSU is the reason I am Nathan Fluellen Worldwide Nate. That's my moniker. Because when I was there, my professor, Dr. Hall, he had wrote his autobiography called Crossing Cultures. And it documented his travels from the age of 17 to however the age he was at the time. And he documented his travels to over 80 countries. So he would tell me that I would come to his class or come to his office after class. I didn't pay much attention to class, he said, but I would come to his office and ask him about all these different places he had been around the world. So when he published his book, he gave me a copy and he signed it. He said, I challenge you to see more countries than me and become an entrepreneur. And so when he said that, I was like, oh, I can do that. Because my family growing up, they had traveled halfway across the world with my mother going on missionary trips to the church. Two cousins playing basketball overseas, another cousin that's lived overseas. So I always put that traveling the world into the bucket for the adults. And so when he gave me that challenge, I was like, oh, I'm an adult. I can go do this. I'm gonna take your challenge. So TSU was a big influence on my life and everything I've done.
And this particular instructor, so I love your story. That's what I was fighting. Like, I hope nothing happens. I've got to meet him and talk to him. I've got to talk to you, man. I didn't even know Black folks was into water. I'm like, oh my gosh. Because when I grew up, my parents anyway, my mother in particular, was taught to be afraid of water. And I'm a U.S. Navy vet. And I was afraid of water the whole time. I'm still a little afraid of water. I don't like the feeling of being wet. Mm. And then number two, and I'm going to lead into why I'm talking about this. And then number two, I think it's a carryover in my spiritual mind. It's a carryover from slavery that we were dumped into water. And I think a lot of people emotionally and spiritually, it carried over into some of our DNA. Because my mom literally, even in the Navy, I was afraid of water. They had to throw the pole in there to get me out, Nathan, I'm ashamed to say. But I was like, stand up. You're taller than the water. Mm-hmm. And I was like so afraid, I remember, of like, you know, looking in the water. But you have traveled over 60 countries, around more. six continents, right? 84?
82, 83, all seven continents now. Yeah.
Okay, so all seven continents. So since this was written, your bio, you need to change it because it said six. Oh my gosh, what have you, out of all the places you visited, Nathan, what is, do you feel, which area or country had the highest frequency for water? Because water is a healing element. I'm a water sign and I'm very much into these kinds of things. So what was the biggest influence you felt frequency-wise? And that would be a good area for people to experience healing while they're in water.
Well, that would be Africa. The inspiration for me to learn how to surf was because of I discovered the Zulu Boys and Girls Surfers in Durban, South Africa. So Durban has a special place in my heart. Brazil is also a special place. That's my favorite. Rio de Janeiro is my favorite city.
Really?
So I would say, and then those places that have a high Brazil actually has the second largest population of Black people outside of the continent of Africa.
And then are you serious?
Yes.
In Rio, you know, in particular?
Well, the whole entire country of Brazil. I've just, as far as out of the cities, I frequented Rio the most, but 51% of Brazil is Black.
Before you visited there, did you know that? Had you done any of the research or what?
I didn't do any of the research, but funny enough, hip hop, you know, with the video with Beautiful with Snoop and Pharrell, it opened my mind. And then shortly after that video, there's a movie called City of God. And so that show Rio in the 70s. With the creation of the favelas and that might, not the creation, but just the that story of it was like, it was a violent story, but it was a beautiful story as well, yeah, taking place in the favelas. So when I saw those depictions, I knew that they were like, it just instinctively Black people there. And I tell people, it's like their boat went left to go south to Brazil. They speak Portuguese. Our boat went right to come to America, and we speak English. Because when I'm down there, I see people that look just like people I grew up with. It's uncanny just how, you know, that connection across the African diaspora is.
Are you bilingual?
Yeah, I'm learning. I speak French now. So I've been learning French for the past 5 years.
I do bon français.
Oui. So I started learning French because of my third TV show I filmed in Senegal and Cameroon. And then when I was doing research about French, I discovered that 14 countries in Africa speak French. So I saw that this is the worthwhile investment because it allowed me to communicate with more Black people.
That's right. More. And I know that too. I know some people from Cameroon, those areas, and they do speak a lot more French than they do Spanish or any other language. Are there different variations of the language according to the territory or the area that you're visiting, or is it the same thread throughout?
It's all French. It's just you're gonna have different accents. Or I visited Guadeloupe and they said that they'll speak Creole, but it's like a Creole French. So it may be some words they eat words, so they like swish them together as opposed to pronouncing every word. Like yeah. So when I was in Guadeloupe, I would hear. I'm like, they speak Creole because I don't understand what they say.
Yeah, and it's real fast. When I grew up, my parents used to speak patois, and it sounded real fast. And I would say, we don't understand what they're saying. And my mom was like, if you don't get in there and act like you understand what they're saying, we don't know what they're saying. But listen, when you were in Durban, South Africa, I think what I've read is that you were motivated by some Zulu surfers, and that's what caused you to come up with these ideas about where to take your idea to the next level. Talk a little bit about that and what an experience that might have been for you.
Yeah, it, And I'll actually touch on, you know, the contrast and experience of how you grew up. So I grew up swimming. I started swimming when I was 11 months old. And I grew up on the south side of Chicago. So in my world, all black people knew how to swim because that's all I saw growing up, from my friends to my cousins to the pools being filled in the summer with black people, Lake Michigan. There were some projects behind my grandmama's house. They were full of black people in the pool. So I'm like, in my mind, every black person knew how to swim. So then when I got to Tennessee State, I started hearing black people don't know how to swim. And I kept losing all these arguments. And so when it came time for my show, I discovered the Zulu Boys and Girls surfers through this organization called Surfers Not Street Children. So I looked at this as my opportunity to show that not only do black people know how to swim, they know how to surf. And so I was like, I'm gonna use this, their story, to demystify or course correct, you know, all these things that were put in place to deter us or prevent us from learning how to swim. And so that was the motivation behind discovering the Zulus. And because they're based in Durban. Durban, the state is called KwaZulu-Natal, where King Shaka Zulu rules. So
that movie Shaka Zulu.
So I was like, oh, that was my guy growing up. So I was like, wait a minute, the Zulus? I'm going to Zulu. And then you fly in the King Shaka Zulu International Airport to get there. I was like, oh this is great. I was like, oh, I'm about to turn up for the black culture. We're gonna show y'all.
Do you have the desire? My whole family moved to Australia. So do you have the desire to now relocate out of the United States? Are you currently still living in the States? So what is the deal now that you've seen all these things? It must be hard to contain yourself over here. It's boring over here compared to.
Well, I live in L.A. And so, you know, it's palm trees and sunshine every day. And I surf. So I love L.A. I mean, there's other countries that I'm considering that I will have a second place, but to totally uproot myself, I don't know if I would do that. And then I have a huge family. So I have a lot of cousins, a lot of like aunts and uncles and everything as well, all across the United States. So, and I'm a big, I like to see my family and stuff. So it would, I'm a big family guy. So just being able to have the means to keep traveling is what I'm focusing on. And then if and when the opportunity comes to find some land where I can build something and build the perfect spot, or some opportunity that can come down the pipeline, I'll take advantage of that. But right now I'm just enjoying moving by the wind, you know.
To live and die in LA. You know, I like LA. I probably won't relocate, only because I don't feel like doing all of that. I don't feel like moving, relocating, and doing all. It's a lot of work. But I'm glad that we know other people that live over places, and we have places to go. So I want to talk to you a little bit about, is it pronounced Kavata?
Yes, Kavata swimwear.
Kavata. So I went online and I saw the swimwear. The swimwear is very attractive and very lots of color. And you know, that Biba Boom, that whole African, because they like color. They're not afraid to wear color and be vibrant and all of that. So talk a little bit about Kavata and tell us why you were so inspired to, it is a special kind of swimwear that adapts to water, or how does that work with how you work it?
It's surf performance. So it has this four-way stretch material. So, so another offering to compete with like the major brands that are staples in the surf community of retail and apparel, like the Rip Curl or Patagonia, Billabong. And I want to have a black owned brand, Kavata Swimwear. And Kavata is actually my sister's middle name. First name is Laini. Middle name is Kavata. And so I wanted to honor her because unfortunately she passed from triple negative breast cancer. And so, So a portion of our sales goes towards Lion Charities, which raises funds for triple negative breast cancer research. So I just wanted to make an impact with the brand.
And where's Kavata based out of?
We're based in L.A. Yeah, we're based in L.A.
Oh, so you guys are right here with me.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next surfing party, I definitely expect to be invited, okay?
Okay.
Now, are there any limitations to surfing, to diving to swimming because of someone's age, because of any kind of physical impairments, anything like that, that will prevent them from fully diving or fully partaking of this kind of aquatic sport?
No, no, there's no prohibitive things. Just, you just want to have, water safety is important. So you want to have a basic foundational understanding of how to swim and navigate any body of water. And then when you said diving, you have to get the PADI certification, PADI. So to do like scuba diving, and that's a whole nother realm of aquatic sports. Yeah. But right now just focusing on staying above water with the surfing and, basic surfing skills and understanding how to catch waves and navigate the ocean or, open bodies of water.
What would be some of the differences between just a person regularly swimming because they enjoy swimming and just looking cute in the water versus someone that's very dedicated to using water sports as a way of exercise, healing, and meditation? I'd like for you to address those things in particular.
Surf, being in the ocean, call it saltwater therapy.
Okay.
So that, the salt water just has healing properties in itself. So whether you're just like splashing around, surfing, maybe it's sitting in some shallow body of water, meditating, regardless of what you're doing, just being in that water is for me, it's therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And so I feel refreshed. I feel energized. Always being in the water.
Yeah. So what about water being meditative in healing? There must be the element of water is healing in itself. So what about that aspect? Is that something that you focus on when you're teaching or training people how to dive and how to surf and swim?
Oh, well, so, okay. So great question. So I, for me, just sitting in the water on my surfboard is like a subconscious meditation, because just being in that body, paddling out, being in that body of water, that's therapeutic for me. When it comes to, I don't teach scuba diving, but when I have taught some people how to surf, I'm focusing more so on teaching them how to navigate surfing so they can catch waves and do that exercise. Now, there is an organization called Black Surface Collective. They're focusing really? On, yeah, there is, they're based in Los Angeles, ran by Greg and Marie. And then Marie is leading a water therapy class for women in the community. I can't speak to the just focus on the therapy aspect of it, but it does exist. So Black Surface mm-hmm. Collective is doing that. Another sister named Ludine, she's working in that area as well. So there are, people of color, but Black people that are focusing on surf therapy, water therapy in the community that are out there doing that. So it does exist.
Well, in systems like, there's a Japanese guy, I can't think of his name, but he's Japanese, and he actually shows how powerful the element of water is by doing things like taking a body of water and then doing something like shouting into the water, hello, or being angry and then using that anger, and they freeze the water, and then the water forms all these different patterns according to the moods and emotion of the person doing it. So that's why I'm so focused on, you guys are doing water and you're looking at it from a technical, productive, functional aspect. But on the flip side of that, in the healing world, in the world of healing and therapy, water is used for a lot of different things that are therapeutic for people in general.
And that's why that sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's why I'm wanting to talk to you more about, but doesn't it do something for the body? I know people that use water to exercise. That's their choice, is to swim versus running, or, to use water versus doing these other things. Even, doesn't the Olympics have some kind of water aspect where they have people do sports in water. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like a variety of water of water sports. And so I would say, you know, as a byproduct of surfing, it does for me does like, you know, I would say some healing or restorative have restorative elements for where I feel, you know, mentally have a mental reset or my body feels, you know, a lot better after I surf or just any type of stress that I was probably like, you know, or just things that were I was probably worried about throughout the day. Those things are alleviated or a lot of times it could be a therapeutic session where stuff that I was trying to figure out the answers to in between waiting on the wave. I had these light bulb moments, these voila, you know, as I'm just sitting there in this water, and I attribute that to being in the water surfing.
And then in Lamaze classes, when babies are born, they're born into water. You know, they deliver them into water. And then, you know, you have the whole theme of the body being this much percentage of water, you know, so water is a really important element for a lot of things. I mean, I think the earth is covered with three-fourths of the planet is water and all of that. But exactly. What I want to talk to you about, I also mentioned that how you've helped break the cycle of the African diaspora not being connected to the world of aquatics. Is that how you said aquatics?
Aquatics.
So a lot of people, I'm one of them, I didn't know it was such a big world now. I mean, you know, you were talking about my background. Again, we were taught don't go near the water. It had nothing to do with my hair. My hair loves water. I'm Creole, so it loves being wavy and, you know, getting water in it. So I don't have that problem. My mother was particularly afraid that we would drown. And, you know, so we had this natural fear. And like you said, you grew up thinking everybody swam. I grew up thinking nobody swims. I mean, why do we swim? And then you hear the myths about the hair and your hair can't get wet and all that. How does what you do with the Great Stoke yearly dispel all of those kind of ignorant myths, I would suppose, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, a great day in the Stoke is that is one of the mechanisms that's embedded in it. It's to demystify, you know, the sport of surfing, and then to also show that Black people do know how to swim and surf. And so I always say that surfing is the medicine and the candy, because if we could show Black people dancing on waves, then that and then kids can see those images, then that can motivate them to bug their parents that they want to learn, they want to surf, which will result in the parents getting to learn how to swim. So if they never surf, that's fine. But if they get that basic water safety and learn how to swim, then that's mission accomplished. Or I've experienced where a guy saw that I was surfing. He's like, oh, we're surfing now. He's like, I want to try that. And he's like, oh, but I got to learn how to swim first. And I'm like, okay, great, mission accomplished. So it's about planting those seeds and then showing that, you know, we can do everything, anything. We show up in any space and we are maximizing the human experience. And that's what I want us to do as well, is be able to maximize our potential to live the full human experience on Earth, to where we can go skydiving or go, you know, dominate in the Olympics or hike up to Mount Everest and then surf waves or go scuba dive and go to Antarctica and, you know, become billionaires and do everything that we could possibly do, so we can have those living examples to where we can inspire our community to be able to see it and believe it. And that's why representation matters. So that's the purpose of a great day in the Stoke, is it's multifaceted. So we can, as I say, the chocolate tide is rising, so we can show that, you know, we're coming, the culture is coming to the sport, we're gonna make it, we're gonna revolutionize it as we do with everything, and support, give a spotlight to the OGs, the people that came before us. Like, there was like Tony Corley, who started Black Surfers Association in the 1960s, and then
Tony Corley,
and so they celebrated 50 years of the BSA last year at a Great Day in the Stoke. And then you have a lady named Sharon Schaefer, who's the first Black female professional surfer. And then there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of people.
There's a whole world going on that people don't even know about. They even never mentioned this in Hollywood. I've never seen anything mentioned in the trades about a Black surfing celebration, a this or that or the other. They often talk about the Beach Boys and things like that, but there has never been any conversation about on what you and I are talking about right now.
Right, exactly. And that's the purpose of a great day in Stoke, to give highlight to the past and, you know, highlight what we're doing in the present, and then be that voice or be that representation so we can, you know, cultivate the next surf champion. And so that even, for example, there's this young lady named Maisie Gordon. She's probably about 15 now, 14, 15. She's winning surf competitions. She lives in San Clemente, California. She's awesome. And then there's, Maisie could be our next like example of like Coco to Serena to Coco, or Serena to Naomi. And then we have like Sharon Schaefer to Maisie. And then Maisie has the potential to be a world champion or even compete and make the Team USA in the Olympics in Brisbane.
I heard of a young lady yesterday that someone told me about. I'm going to try to get her to come on the show. And she is a world-renowned surfer, diver, black girl. She talks to dolphins. She's won all of these awards. So I'm going to get her name, and I'll send it to you. And you'll have her name as well, because she's one of them. I'm like, do they know about her? It's like, oh, no, I'm going to share her with you. I'm sure they've heard of her if they're in that kind of world. But okay. Let's go back to your love for Brazil. Now, I used to hear brothers back in the day, they all was going to Brazil. I'm like, why are you guys going to Brazil? What's the big thing about Brazil? They never would tell me. They was like, oh, yeah, we're going to Brazil. I'll be going. What is going on over in Brazil? They never would tell us. And now you tell me it's that population over there. Do you feel that more Black people would surf and dive and swim if the waters in the United States were as warm as they are in some of the other countries? I don't like cold water. I don't like any feeling of being uninvited or cold or something off-putting at all. What do you say about that?
I mean, I don't like the cold water either, but I put on a thick wetsuit and surf in California. The water is cold. And then there's some black people that is what they know, and they get in the water, and I'm like, I look at them crazy, like, this water is freezing. But it's just that they don't know any better, and that's their water temperature that they like. I'm like you. I like warm bodies of water myself, but when it comes to surfing, I will get in some cold water with the right equipment. But I think that the main thing is the water safety. And so I want to mention this Black surf documentary. It's called Wade in the Water. It was directed by David Mespin.
Wade in the Water?
Yeah, like the Negro spiritual.
Yeah.
So it's called Wade in the Water, directed by David Mespin. And he had this doctor, I forget his name, but he has evidence. There's evidence that surfing goes back even probably earlier than surfing in Hawaii. And then in the film, he talks about how the Africans were such great divers that when the merchants from Europe was coming, they would get stuck, and then the Africans would swim in these big waves and then help them like get to shore, etc. And so when they were during the slave trade, when the pirates were coming and having battles with the sailors, and then there would be treasures that would sink to the bottom of the ocean, and then they would hire the Africans. And they had the skills to go dive and retrieve the treasure. And so eventually what they did was they started moving the slave plantations inland so the slaves wouldn't use the water as a way to escape, because they were such proficient swimmers. And so when they kept moving everybody more inland, then that took away the ability for them to gain their water safety skills. And then you have generations and generations where we now feel like, oh, that myth, that stereotype becomes accepted by even just Black people, that we don't know how to swim, when culturally, historically, 400 or 500, 600 years ago, there was a proficiency of Africans that know how to swim. And they and still, there's a huge fishing culture in Ghana and Senegal, and a lot of those people that live on the coastal areas, they know how to swim. And so it was just that mechanism to prevent Black people from having the opportunity to escape slavery is what, you know, a lot was the cause of us lose our ability to know how to swim prevalently. So it all, you know, it's funny. It's like it all comes back down to racism. It's like stuff that you got to overcome, you know. That's pretty much, you know, what we have to overcome, you know, our story right now. And so right now with the Great Dane Stoke and Kavada Swimwear and just the representation I want to put out there, it's my effort to course correct, you know, just the effort of like this past slavery or even more modern day contemporary times with the public pools. With counties and cities reducing the investment in the public pools, that's a factor that prevented Black people know how to swim. So I did some research. I got it from this company called Black Aquatics. That's not Black Aquatics. The name will come to me, but they have a lot of research. And so there's 3 million private pools and 300,000 public pools in America. So with the Great White Flight, with the creation of the suburbs, it privatized swimming. And so the few public pools that do exist, they're predominantly in white neighborhoods. And then with fiscal conservatism in the 70s and 80s, that cut out the budgets to build more pools, or they closed them down. You know, even after desegregation, you know, white folks they didn't want to have Black people swimming in the pool. So as they're middle finger to us, they would close the pool as opposed to integrating the pool as well. So there's those types of things that happened because prior to World War II, the pool was the social area that people came to congregate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so before the great white flight of the suburbs, public pools were prevalent, and that's how, like, you know, people learned how to swim because you're gonna be at the pool socializing. They more likely had swimming lessons available, etc. So with this energy, with these multi-layer facets of fiscal budget reductions, you know, just the suburbs being created, et cetera, that's what had prevented Black people from learning how to swim. And mm-hmm. So I actually, I had a pool growing up in the suburbs. And so but my mother told me that when her and my godmother moved to the neighborhood, it was just three Black people. And then by the time I was born, 10 years later, it was majority Black, but we had these facilities that were created as an effect of the Great White Flight. And then I had a pool, and I had all these Black people, and we had a pool that was 3 feet to 12 feet deep with a diving board, and it was all middle class Black people learning how to swim. So I was fortunate enough to be able to benefit from that. But the people that were, you know, they're still in the inner city, they didn't have that same privilege.
Wow, what a story. So all of this came about from you traveling and thinking of ideas of how to incorporate our culture into that kind of sports, because they have it definitely. One, I'm not a big sports watcher on TV. I'd rather see it live. Mm-hmm. But one thing that used to fascinate me when my dad, who'd take over every TV in the house to watch any kind of sports, anyway, he would watch Wide World of Sports.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the speed swimming, and, you know, they do the button and they swim really fast. And there was all kind of things that were aquatic. But to me, with you bringing in diving and surfing, it's taken on a whole nother level for even competition now in worldwide sports because of all of the work that's being done in that field. I wanted to ask you, as you were talking about the things that prevent us from becoming better swimmers, better surfers, better divers. Are there problems with getting licensings from certain areas to go and have you guys dive or where do you surf? What are some of the constituents around those kinds of, you have to have certain kind of locations, be able to bring a group of people that are going to go into the water. There has to be certain laws and regulations. What are some of those things? Do they get in the way?
Well, there isn't a with surfing, it's not regulated like that.
A lot of people
will say, well, I've heard people say that lived in California that they their friend was, you know, they grew up with some friends that went surfing and their friends took them out with them and that's how they learned how to surf. So it's a very casual thing. There are people that have surf schools and I'm pretty sure that they just need to have just a business license. But there isn't any heavy regulation, with the exception of Huntington Beach, where I have my surf competition. You have to have a permit to be able to do surf lessons in Huntington Beach. And I think that's because of the beach is so popular. The U.S. Open of Surfing takes place there, which is the world's largest surf competition. It's 9 days. And our competition takes place at the same exact beach break. I want our community to be able to see and believe and know that, okay, the world's best competes here, you know, we can compete here. So Huntington Beach is Surf City USA. It's a big surf culture. You know, you can say it's a surf capital. It's definitely surf capital of the United States. I'll have to check and see if it's other world. But when you say scuba diving, now with Patty, that's an entirely different world where it's an international association. And so if you have a PADI scuba certification for scuba diving, you're able to scuba dive like everywhere around the world. Mm-hmm. And scuba diving is a lot more intense, a lot more safety regulated, with having oxygen and being 30, 50, 100 feet under the sea level, under the surface. So that's a whole different it's a heightened level of risk. Mm-hmm. So you have so that's international right there. So you can't circumvent that.
Wow. I didn't know. I know Huntington Beach is a really interesting area. It has a lot of things going on. But like you said, you know, there are a lot of things that go along with scuba, certain aspects of diving, I guess, that would be on a basic thing wouldn't be as strict. Because of those things, we're getting close to time. Because of those things, are there costs involved? Do you just charge for people to come to class, get the equipment? What are some of the expenses? Because the first thing people are going to say is like, oh, now it's another thing I have to pay for, and then I got to pay for the class, and then I got to pay for parking, and then I got to talk about that.
Yeah, so when you're starting off taking surf lessons, you'll the surf lesson includes the wetsuit, the board, and the lesson. And so so you can find surf lessons, they probably can range. I know when I started, I found a Groupon, and it had a great price. I think it was like $30 or $60 or something like that. Damn. And that's all included. Now, what you said when those taxing on the cost of items, that's when you fall in love with the sport, and then you don't need to take lessons anymore, and then you catch the bug. Then it's like, oh, I need this board. I need this board. Oh, I need this wetsuit. I need this wetsuit. Wow. I need this leaf. So that's like based on, there's nobody's forcing you to do that, but the bug will force you to do it.
you get a bug.
Yeah, you know, you just start loving it. I have like 6 surfboards. I have about 5 wetsuits. I mean, I got surf bags. I got surf racks.
You live near the water. Do you guys live around water? You don't have to tell location. Nope. Do you live around water?
No, I live in the middle of L.A., so I drive 20, 30 minutes to go surf.
Oh, wow, drive.
Yeah, that's how much of the bug I have. It's time, gas, everything.
But I imagine in the summer when it's really hot, that's probably really refreshing to go out to those places and surf and, you know, things like that, wouldn't you think? Or is it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But L.A. is tricky. It's some. Or at least I'm a little wimp because it has to be like perfect hot day. It has to be like a swell from like Tahiti or something that makes the water warmer for me to surf without a wetsuit. Uh-huh. I will have a wetsuit on because I'm not trying to be cold in the water shivering. So unless I'm in the Caribbean or maybe Florida or somewhere like Bali where it's like 80 degree temperature, like bath water, that's when I'm having on some board shorts and a t-shirt.
Oh, but my God.
In L.A., I remember it was one summer where I surfed without a wetsuit and no shirt on. And that was like 5, 6 years ago. And it hasn't happened and I don't know what happened or what's been happening, but it's been very far and few between. But other people do it though, because they acclimated to that temperature. But me, I'm no.
How has the weather changing, climate change affected surfing and swimming in general? Because you know, a lot of they're banning. I saw something the other day. You couldn't go on a certain part of the ocean out in Venice or somewhere because it was something happening. How has that affected your business?
Well, what you probably heard about or saw in Venice, it could have been after a storm. So the way LA is set up is that the drains flood into the ocean. So they want you to, after a storm, wait 72 hours because of like heightened bacterial levels. So that's and we've been having a lot of rain. So that's probably the warning right there. But some, I don't take this chance, but the hardcore surfers, when it is a storm, like right before, after, that's when the waves are like really, really good. But I'm like, I don't need to take that chance. I'll wait. There's gonna be more waves.
But how do they get used to being that high on top of the water? Every time I see a surfer, you know, that's why women were in love with, like, oh, he's a surfer boy. He's a surfer dude. You know, it's like a cultural cult. You know, they're surfers.
Oh yeah.
So you know. How do you get past the fear that you're not going to fall off the board and bust your butt out there and nobody ever finds you and you'll go underwater?
Oh, you never get over the fear. You just love it. You just know what that sensation is to catch that wave. Or if the wave is too big, you just don't try to catch it. You wait for the next one. You have options.
So that's a part of the thrill, is riding the wave.
Oh yeah. Oh, and it's only like 3-5 seconds, but it's like, oh, I caught a wave. And then you'll be out there for an hour and maybe catch one wave or two or three or 10. But even if you just catch one and it was just amazing, it's like, oh, it was, you don't even think about all the paddling you did, all the times getting thrown around in the wash machine with the wave and almost barely coming up for air. You forget about all that for catching that one wave. It just resets everything.
Well, I love that your face still lights up after all this time about talking about surfing and diving and your business. What we want to do, because we're getting close to closing time, I'd like for you to give us your social media tags. We're going to listen very carefully to the names you threw out about these people that are involved. I know there are a lot of the people out there going, what? They've got something, you know, I love water, blah, blah, blah. Didn't we even know about it? So do that, and let's roll out. Go ahead.
Okay. So my personal Instagram handle, all social media, is Worldwide Nate, at Worldwide Nate. Kavada Swimwear is Kavada Swim. So Kavada is spelled K-A-B-A-T-A, Swim. And also that's the website, KavadaSwim.com. And then A Great Day in the Stoke. So the name was inspired by A Great Day in Harlem. In 1957,
arcane,
yeah. And then there was A Great Day in Hip Hop in 1998. And then in 2022, we had A Great Day in the Stoke. So even with the name, it had to be rooted in something historical in the Black lexicon of iconic events. So I'm all about promoting and, you know, my people. So once again, that is A Great Day in the Stoke. That's the handle, and agreatdayinthestoke.com.
What is the stoke?
It's a term of excitement, like I'm stoked.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was something to do with diving or something, like, oh, it's called a stoke, or it's something, a part of the language of your culture.
It's the surfer lingo.
Yeah, I thought it was legal. So first of all, I want to say thank you for coming onto the show today. It's been very enlightening. I'm so stoked about now knowing about this. And I'm going to pay more attention to what you guys are doing. We could probably get some media people out there and get some more attention on you, because I'm telling you, I would never have known had I not knew Monique and she had not put me in touch and put us in touch. So it's a wonderful thing. I want to give a shout out to Sam Hassan, LA Talk Radio. Thank you, Sam, for helping me bring shine to the show every week. And I loke my looms. I loke like you, meaning that I like you for who you are, what you stand for every day. being those bright, wonderful luminaries out there shedding light, love, and peace upon the world as we dive into more chaos. And I love you for showing up every day and for showing up for me, supporting me, helping me with those numbers and the digits, because we know we need them. And on IG, you can find me on the handle Osiris underscore Munir underscore the painter. So that's IG. And pretty much just Google Osiris Munir. I'm everywhere, all over, all everywhere, all over, everywhere, all at once, same time. That's me moving on all these different directions. And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe our channel. I cannot. I could, but I cannot do it without you giving numbers. We could fake numbers, buy numbers, or whatever you do, but I really want your genuine love. I appreciate every time you come to the show, and we have beautiful guests like our wonderful Nathan Fluellen today, and who's also our luminaire. So we want to thank him again for coming onto the show. And is there anything you want to say before we go, Nathan?
Yes. Come hang 10 on 1010 at the 5th annual A Great Day in the Stoke in Huntington Beach, California.
Okay. So it's on October 10th.
Yes.
And it's in Huntington Beach.
Yes.
And what are the times?
Yep, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay, so it's a full day event.
Yes.
And this is a contest, a premiere. What are we coming for?
We're going to have the Black Surf Competition. We provide free surf lessons. Lexus is our sponsor. We have Lululemon as a sponsor. So we have a 5K run walk. We have beach yoga. Nickelodeon last year was a sponsor of our kid zones. We have a kid zone.
Oh, my gosh, you are kicking butt. Yeah. Look at you out there doing all these things. So let's talk him up, everybody. Talk him up. Talk him up. I want to hear nothing but the great Stoke. I want to hear nothing but Cavada this whole month and for here on after. Because now that I know about you, I'm going to be giving shout outs to you guys and making sure that people have heard of you. Okay, I promise to do that. It's such a wonderful awesome. Thing of what you're doing. So again, thank you for coming onto the show. Let's thank our audience for coming. Thanks everybody for joining us in the Osiris Munir Show, and we will see you next week. Bye bye, hugs and kisses. Thank you, Nathan.
Bye bye.
You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.